Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter, and I'm a commodity broker here at StoneX. We work in the grain and oil seeds, energy, and dairy markets. Work with producers and consumers, hedgers and speculators. We do futures and options, structured products in the OTC market, and for our hedging clients on both the production and user side. We also do consulting for them, too. So if you have any questions about that, what me and my group do, please give me a call at 312-706-7610, or you can email me at craig.turner@stonex.com. All right, so let's get into it here. We're going to start off with the macro markets, like as usual. We're going to talk about that inflation number that came out this week, and then we'll jump on into the WASD and what we're seeing here for the commodity markets going forward. So a little backdrop on the inflation numbers, or the, you know, the CPI and the core inflation that came out this week. With all of the very aggressive central bank moves and interest rates going up now for a few months, there was this expectation that we would start seeing inflation to break. And then the CPI came out and was over 8%. And I want to say the core inflation number, which was over 6%, was the highest in 40 years. It was not good. That was very deflating, I'd say, to a lot of people, either on the policy side, investment and trading, where we really did, everyone just wanted to see inflation at least start to break. Like, no one was under any illusion that, you know, inflation would go away, but you do want to see the trends start going lower instead of, you know, making an all-time core inflation high, or not an all-time, a 40-year high, I should say. So that was disappointing. And, you know, one of the reasons why it's disappointing is now because the Fed is looking at the employment stats, and employment is relatively good. We're still under 4% unemployment. The economy's okay. I mean, you know, some will argue in a recession. I think we're in a mild recession. We've already had two quarters of negative growth. You know, you have the administration that doesn't see us in a recession, and they may be right too. You know, it's close. It's a close fine line, you know, if we're in recession or not. I think a lot of economists out there are saying that, you know, maybe if we're not in one right now, we'll be in 2023. And when the Fed looks at this data and they see the economy performing okay, and, you know, and we're officially or not in recession, and they see the labor market still strong, they're only going to focus, or their main focus is going to be on inflation. And you get this poor report again, you know, the next time the Fed meets, which is in November, there's going to be this expectation of higher interest rates. And now, you know, I think the trade was kind of hoping that inflation wouldn't be so bad on this report. It would start coming down. And maybe the Fed wouldn't have to raise 75, you know, maybe it could be 50. Maybe they could start, you know, increasing rates, but now at a slower clip. And I think that was really the hope. And that report this week kind of dashed that. So macro markets will probably get punished for it. Stock market will be lower. You know, the strength that we saw in crude oil, because OPEC decided to cut 2 million barrels per day. You know, and we had that rally from what, the mid to high 70s, almost to 90 again, or, and now we've backed off. I want to say crude's now at 85 or lower. We're getting there, right? Because we had, I'll take a look at the chart real quick. But yeah, we got down into the 70s. News came out that OPEC was going to make the cut. Yeah, we almost ran up to 95. We almost went from like 76 to 94 during that whole thing. And here we are now back in like the middle, in the mid 80s. And it has a lot to do with, you know, what are the expectations for growth here. So then, you know, the Fed has been saying all along they would like to get want to say to about 4% by the end of the year. And it looks like they're going to get there. So, and, you know, into 2023, I think they want to be somewhere in the fours. I can't remember if it's the mid fours or the high fours, like 425 to 475. And they're going to stay there for a while, probably all through 2023, and see if that can slow down inflation. So that is the idea. That's what's going on right now. That's the big macro story of the week. When I take a look at some of the energy charts and production numbers, two things kind of popped out at me this week. One, on crude, the United States is still not producing as much as we need to, especially if the economy starts growing again. And also, the stocks that we have on hand are still not great. The SPR is low, and our refining capacity is still, you know, isn't improving, which means if these things change, if we don't do any exploration and find new energy sources, or let's say for crude, if we don't put money and investment into refinery, or another part is if renewables just, you know, renewables really need to increase dramatically in order to meet future demand, which doesn't seem like we're on the pace on that yet. When the economy does turn, let's say it's in, you know, the middle of 2023, you know, we could have energy shortages here. Just looking at, and I'm just merely looking at supply and demand, you know, what we can produce, what economic growth would suggest demand would be, and our refining capacity. And then with the deficit in there isn't being made up by renewable yet. So that's number one. On the flip side, when I took a look at natural gas, you know, our storage is going higher, or it's catching up. It's getting better, the storage numbers. The production is over demand. So we are producing now more on the supply side than we have on, than that is needed on the demand side, which is allowing for the storage to kind of catch up here and get to more adequate levels. And quite honestly, at some point will be burdensome. So natural gas has more of a bearish tone. Now I know gases around the world are very expensive, especially in Europe, and there's only so much liquefied natural gas you can get out of this country. And maybe that can expand, but demand can only go up so much here in the United States, and the production is still pretty strong. So when I take a look at these production charts and the usage and demand, looks fairly bullish crude, and then, you know, heating oil and diesel more in the winter months, and RBOB gasoline in the summer months, and it just looks like a bearish trend. And I wouldn't be surprised if natural gas was a good bit lower this time next year, depending on what happens on Europe. That's always going to be the wild card for a little while. So that's where we are on the energy side, which brings us to the grains and the oil seeds. So the USDA released, one last thing on that. So on energy, if I need to hedge at all, if I'm on the buy side of the energy market for natural gas, I'm in no rush to hedge natural gas right here, unless we think something worse is going to happen in Europe in escalation, which certainly could happen. There's a lot of uncertainty there. One thing that, you know, and then on the energy side for crude oil, heating oil, and RBOB, you know, we can certainly come down. Those markets are so sensitive to economic growth, and if we go into a deeper recession, they'll probably come down. But at some point, there's going to be a buy there, because when this market, when the economy turns around and we start having economic growth, there is going to be a tipping point where I don't think, my personal opinion, just looking at the charts analysis, is there will be a point where, unless renewables really kick in to expanding at a rate that we don't see possible right now, right? Or if there's some kind of a huge reversal on fossil fuels that leads to a lot of exploration and investment, it looks like a ticking time bomb out there sometime in 2023 when demand starts to outstrip supply. Hopefully I'm wrong on that, but, you know, the thing is, if not, you know, it does make sense to be looking into some call option strategies for 2023, just protect some energy exposure. So, And we certainly can continue to look into that. All right, on the grain and oilseed side, WASD had their WASD this week. It was on Wednesday, reset 11 a.m. And, you know, listen, the grain and oilseeds have tight stocks to begin with. So when these numbers come out, I'm going to say they're bullish or bearish. They're bullish or bearish against expectations, keeping when all the stocks are tight. So, you know, in the grand macro scheme of things, the grain market is generally perceived as bullish or elevated because stocks are so tight in corn, wheat, soybeans, canola. But then there is, but all that's priced in. So where are we going from now, and how do the market view these reports against expectations? Soybeans was bullish. The yield came down below 50. It was like 49, high 49s. On that, and we were expecting about 50 and a half. So instead of having ending stocks at around 250, 260, they came down to 200 million bushels. Now, I do think I wouldn't be surprised if just talking to farmers out there and seeing some of the reports, I wouldn't be surprised if soybean yields eventually inch up a little bit to be over 50. And I wouldn't be surprised either that with the high price of the dollar and a lot of new crop production coming on in South America and more oil seed being able to get out of the Black Sea, and Canada having a good crop this year, I can see exports for soybeans in the United States come down. I can see that eventually easing, where new crop ending stocks for soybeans are 250 to 300. Does that mean we need to be at $14 in beans? You know, maybe. I could also argue for $13 in that kind of environment. And if South America has a monster crop, I can even start thinking about, you know, into the 12s. Now, that's a long way off. That's at least 6 months off. And there's a lot of weather premium and South American, you know, weather markets to be traded between now and then. On the canola side, we saw the USDA reduce their production estimates to 19.5 million metric tons. This is no shocker. I mean, the high end of the range potential of this crop was going to be 20 million metric tons. Probably the low range is like 18 and a half. USDA is coming at 19 and a half. I bet Stats Canada comes in pretty close to that too. And what that probably means is canola has to price ration about a million metric tons of exports this year, as opposed to six or seven that they had to do last year. So we're still tight, and on the balance sheets will be tight, but the amount of price rationing that needs to be done is less. So hard to see canola be a 1,000 to 1,200 market again, but you know, 700-800 into the 900s kind of makes sense. And then if we get 20 million acres again for new crop seedings, let's say in the spring, and we start doing a trend line yield, I mean, you can see that's when the canola market really starting to break, especially if South America has a big crop and we do another like 88 million acres or more of soybeans here in North America. But so soybeans and canola will tend to be high priced because stocks are tight. But as we go on down the future, and if we just start averaging in some fairly conservative, or on average 1 acres and B trend line yields, those markets really start to loosen up in the next 6 to 12 months. And I think the market will recognize that, and we'll have to keep prices high for a while just to price ration the needed amount of, you know, soybeans and canola just to get through 6 more months to a year of the marketing year. But after that, you get average sized crops in South America, the US, and Canada on the oilseed side. You know, there's going to be no more shortage in that market. So if I'm a farmer, I'm starting to use these rallies to look for 2023 easier to do in soybeans than in canola. And then if I'm on the buy side, I'm still buying month to month. Maybe I'm having some calls out there just in case prices spike because you get a South American weather issue. But hopefully those, you know, if you're on the consumer side and you're a buyer of, you know, either the oil, whole oil seed or the meal of the oil, you're kind of hoping those calls, you know, you don't need them and you get your product at a much cheaper price. And again, the opposite would be for the farmer. You got to start. I think we need to start getting serious about next year's crop. If things go well, I don't know if we'll get, you know, these, sometimes you get the best prices this time of year or from a South American weather market, especially in the oil seed market, if we're going to go from a tight to an abundant slash burdensome market. So something to consider here going forward. Finally, let's talk about grains. Transition from oil seeds to grains. You know, the grain markets, the corn, we did get a yield cut, but you know, we're also going to get cuts in demand. I mean, $7 corn has proven to slow demand, especially on the export side. Brazil is a dollar under. Brazil's going to have a lot of corn. Their ending stocks for Brazil for corn are going higher. They're setting up to have a very big crop on very big, you know, on large acres, not just for soybeans, but for corn too. You know, Ukraine and Europe, corn is cheaper than the United States also. So it just means that the exports, the United States is the world's residual, you know, supplier of grain and oilseed. And you take a look at these global prices, and I wouldn't be surprised if new crop corn, you know, this marketing year, the 22-23 marketing year for exports, corn exports are 2 billion, could even be less, like 1.9, 1.95. Really wouldn't be surprised if that happens. And if it does, then, you know, maybe ending stocks for corn are really like 1.3 to 1.4 billion, which is tight, but it's not dire. And we don't need to be at seven at that point. You know, maybe we're at 550 to six, or, you know, and then if we get 90 plus million acres next year and things loosen up in the Black Sea and we get a trend line yield, this time next year, we could even be, you know, well into the fives. And again, that's just using pretty much some fairly average acre estimates and trend line yields, and that's how you get there. Now, the big wild card is wheat. Wheat got tighter on the balance sheets, mostly due to soft red winter wheat, that Chicago contract, lower production. I think what we'll end up seeing here is wheat is going to stay elevated longer until more is known or solved in the Black Sea. You know, Russia and Ukraine are massive players in the wheat export game. And when you take them out, we're at, you know, rock bottom major exporter supplies. And, you know, and that is why that possibility, wheat deserves to be nine and 10, you know, in the nines, right? And if, you know, we're having all this harvest and new product come to market here over the past couple of months, winter wheat harvest first and spring wheat harvest, that's all wrapped up. I mean, all this wheat product is now, you know, accounted for. Russia is going to has a massive crop. They can't store it. They're going to have to try to get it out of the Black Sea. That's probably why, my opinion, you know, the reason why they're fighting right now about the Black Sea grain corridor deal. You know, it's probably because they want to be exporting more wheat and fertilizer. And the thing is, when they made that deal, you know, Ukraine has been able to send out and do more business. You know, Russia still has these financial sanctions against them that's kind of handicapping them getting their wheat and fertilizer out. So I think what's going on right now is Russia's basically going to say, hey, listen, if we don't get a better deal on this, let's cancel the grain export corridor. The world really can't afford that. They need that Russian wheat. And they also need the fertilizer coming out of Russia for 2023 production. So I have a feeling that gets solved here in the next month too. You know, Russia can fight its war against Western Europe, you know, as an energy war. But I think that they need to get the grain out. They need to get the fertilizer out, and the rest of the world needs it. And since the UN is brokering all this, and, you know, one of the primary thing, the reason why the UN got involved is the food security, you know, for the world deal. I think this goes through. So what does that mean for wheat? You know, if all this wheat can flow out of the Black Sea, it suggests wheat drops down to like $6. If we, you know, still can't get through because of the war, different, you know, bottlenecks, we stay in this 8, 9, 10 area. And if there's an escalation and things just go to heck in a handbasket, you know, then we'll be over 10. But, you know, I don't have a crystal ball on that one. I don't think anyone knows what's going on, you know, in Russia, you know, at the higher levels of power. So it's one of those things where it's a little bit of a wait and see, which I had better advice for wheat on that, but you know, that situation is, you almost have to see how things play out. The risk is to the upside on something very unfortunate happening, and then of course probably have a $2 or $3 of risk to the downside in wheat if that grain corridor, probably have $2 of risk to the downside on wheat if that grain corridor can be fully operational and pretty much and maximize Ukraine and Russian exports out of the Black Sea. I'm not going to hold my breath on that, but that's probably what the reality is. So if if I'm a producer of wheat, I'm a farmer, I'm probably just selling it. And, you know, it's a good price where we are, or hopefully it's a good price for you where you are, and just start focusing on marketing for next year. If I'm a consumer and I'm an end user in the wheat market, you know, I'm still buying month to month. And maybe if I'm looking 3 to 6 months out, you know, if we get breaks below 9 in spring wheat and hybrid winter wheat, or breaks below like 850 or 8 in Chicago wheat, I'm probably looking to buy. It's actually for, and on this, you know, if you are on the buy side, you have an OTC account, accumulators are probably, some kind of accumulation method is probably very, very interesting and beneficial if we should on the next big break. So I'll take a look like that. For some of our farmers, we maybe want to, on the same side with the OTC market, we want to start looking at accumulators for canola and soybeans. So that's probably its most downside risk for the farming side. So anyways, that is what we'll be looking at. If you have any questions for me, you can call me at 312-706-7610. My email is craig.turner@stonex.com. If you like this podcast, please go over to iTunes and give us a positive review. That's how, one of the reasons people find us. If you want to check out the newsletter, you go to turnerstake.com. I mean, if you're a client here and you don't get it, just give me a call. I'll put you on it. And you know, you can always follow me on Twitter at turnerstake. I'm not that active, but you know, hopefully I would like to be. So hopefully you can get that going again. So that is about it. If you have any questions, let me know. Otherwise, have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you next week.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.